Hassebrook. He's executive director of Center for Rural Affairs.
We're going to have to leave it there right now because we're ending the show. I see on the list Sarah Vogel, two-term commissioner of agriculture in North Dakota, Mark Ritchie, current Minnesota Secretary of State Neil Hamilton over at Drake University in Iowa, and Frank Kirschenman in Pontico Hills, New York. That does it for the show. Happy birthday, Nicole Salazar and Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
I'm George Agathos, and this is the Concert Billboard for Tuesday, December 16th, 2008. At the Knitting Factory at 8, the Souls of Mischief, AOK Collective, Tanya Morgan, Uncle Ralph McDaniels doing the DJ video set, and Rob Flo and DJ Synapse. At Blender Theater at Gramercy is King X and 24/7 Spies. On Wednesday, the 17th, we have the Gene Ween Band at Music Hall of Williamsburg at 9 p.m. Knitting Factory has the Variety Shack Farewell to the Knit featuring Eugene Merman, John Glasser, Michael Showalter, and music from Tigers and Monkeys at 7. Wood Songs at the Movies at Clearview Cinema at 7. Crystal Stilts and Vetiver are playing Le Poisson Rouge. CSS is playing Webster Hall. And also tomorrow night, Taft's Bathtub, Jake Miller Band, and Igor's Egg and Daughter and Janine Truly are also playing at Sullivan Hall at 7:30. This was the Concert Billboard, and you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook.
And it's 6:03. You are listening to WUSB Stony Brook. No question about it. It's time for Off the Wall. And good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. Wow, it's bright in here. Oh, usually I do the show with track lighting, and it's kind of dim, and I like it that way. You know, nothing too stressful, but for some reason those lights burned out, and it's either not being able to read anything at all or having to turn on the fluorescence, and it's like... it's like the sun has risen again, and you're on Venus. So, wow. Okay, I'm awake now. I don't need any caffeine with all this light around me. I guess that's good. It's probably better for me to be more awake than mellow. We're going to try to take phone calls tonight, which we didn't get around to doing last week. Did we? I don't think we did. I'll write down the phone number. No, you write down the phone number. I'll say the phone number. I've written it down already. 631-632-9872. If you have any comments on anything that you hear tonight or have heard in the past or would like to hear, feel free to call us and we'll put you on the air. And a special attention to those people who have not called in before, since we don't want to hear the same voices week after week after week. Nothing against those voices, but it's always good to hear new voices. And we know you're out there. We know it. We can tell. Yeah. Well, okay, this week, a lot of interesting things going on. Well, let's start with the fun story first. Yeah, the fun story of... We all saw it. We all saw the video of the guy in Iraq throwing two shoes at Bush. Wow, two shoes, not just one, two. That's what I don't understand, is how he managed. I guess what he must have done, he must have taken off both shoes before he started to hurl them. And boy, that guy had good aim, I gotta say. Look at how he throws it. This guy should be a pitcher. He aimed right. If Bush had not moved his head, it would have hit him square on the head both times, each shoe. This guy's had practice. He's done it before. And hats off for the aim. But yeah, Bush did get out of the way because shoes don't go that fast. And he wasn't sitting up in front. If he was sitting up in front, wow, he would have beamed him for sure. But it was really kind of interesting to watch the video. We've all seen it a million times now, and see the reaction. You see Bush ducking, and you see the Iraqi prime minister reaching, trying to grab the second shoe. And it's, look at the expression on his face. He's just kind of watching as the thing sails over both times. And Bush didn't really, he looked more amused than anything else. Which I guess when you have a shoe being lobbed at you, it doesn't seem that threatening. But, wow, you know, I've talked to a number of people about this, and the consensus seems to be good. That's what I hear from more people than anything. It's about time somebody threw a shoe or something at this guy. And, you know, it got me thinking, yeah, you know, doesn't Bush deserve to have a shoe thrown at him? You know, I don't wish anybody harm. I don't wish anybody true injury. But I do think occasionally you need to be disciplined by the people or by the people around you. For instance, if you ever watch television, you ever watch television? It's around, and there's some things on it that you could learn something from. Particularly when somebody has geared themselves up to be slapped clear across the face. You know, when you disrespect grandma or something on the Waltons, and your face is right in front of her hand so that it's a perfect shot, and you say, wow, John Boy's going to get a slap across the face for saying what he just said, and sure enough, cameras are positioned perfectly for just that, and that's what happens. And that gives us the moral guidance to know when it's appropriate to slap somebody across the face. You know, I've never actually done that. I've never actually wailed on someone's face like that. And I don't even know if it makes that kind of a noise. And it seems to me, whenever they do it on television, whenever you slap somebody across the face on television, they just sort of look a little surprised and they sort of stagger a bit. But in real life, they probably like lunge for your throat or something. I would imagine, just based on my experience with people on other matters. Maybe that's why I haven't slapped anybody across the face. I don't want to see what will happen next. And I have not been slapped across the face myself. At least maybe when I was a kid. I don't remember it. Maybe it was so traumatic I blocked it out. But it probably doesn't feel all that good either. But occasionally you're trained to realize that, yes, this warrants a slap across the face. Not a punch in the jaw. You know, that's a little too serious. But a good smack across the face. Wake up. What's the matter with you? That kind of a thing. Now, is there anyone out there who does not believe that George W. Bush warrants a slap across the face? I think he does. And if I had the opportunity, I would do it. I would slap him across. I would never get the opportunity. I know this. I would have to be within arm's reach of the guy with nothing blocking me. That's never going to happen. But if I found myself in that position, and I say this to all the people who do find themselves in this position, including Laura Bush, the twins, people in the press, people in the inner circle, and whatever cult he's in, I think it's your moral obligation to just slap the guy across the face once. Once is enough for each person. And, you know, is that considered a threat to say that? I don't think it is. And I think with all that he's done, all the bad that he's brought to the world, a few slaps across the face, maybe if they'd come a bit earlier, a lot of this wouldn't have happened. Well, in any event, let's look at how this story unfolded. Now, it's really kind of interesting. I looked up the guy's name as soon as this happened, because I knew this was going to be big, and I wanted to see if this guy had any history. And sure enough, he has a history. Oh my goodness. You know, this guy was a kidnapping victim. He was a kidnapping victim, I believe it was last year. And there was a story on November 17, 2007, entitled Mass Grave Unearthed in Southern Baghdad. A mass grave filled with badly decomposed bodies was unearthed Saturday in southern Baghdad, where relatives of people missing in the neighborhood gathered at a mosque in hopes of learning the fate of their loved ones. It was the third mass grave found in Iraq this month. Now, this was relevant because, I want to say his name right. Let's see if I can get it right the first time. Muntaha Al-Zadi, a 28-year-old reporter for the Iraqi satellite channel Al-Baghdadiya, disappeared on Friday, according to an editor at the channel. The editor spoke on condition of anonymity because of safety concerns. That's not a sentence. Boy, the Associated Press needs work. A colleague phoned Al-Zadi around noon on Friday, and a stranger answered his cell phone, saying, "Forget Muntaha." This is the act of gangs, because all of Muntaha's reports are moderate and unbiased, the editor said to the Associated Press. Al-Baghdadiya TV broadcasts from Cairo, Egypt, and is often critical of the Iraqi government and the U.S. military presence. It is perceived as pro-Sunni. So it didn't look good at that point. It's mass graves being unearthed, strangers answering the cell phone, Shiites kidnapping people, and this being a pro-Sunni channel, supposedly. But this story, which ran on November 17th, Reporters Without Borders hails the release early today, November 19th, 2007, of journalist Muntaha Al-Zadi of the satellite TV station Al-Baghdadiya, who was kidnapped 3 days ago in central Baghdad. According to news agency reports, he was freed unharmed, with no ransom being paid. "It is a great relief to see this journalist return safe and sound to his family," Reporters Without Borders said. His abduction had elicited a great deal of concern, as many journalists have been killed in recent years in Iraq after being taken hostage. "We must continue to campaign for the 14 other journalists of whom there has been no news since they were kidnapped in Iraq." The Iraqi news agency Azwat al-Iraq said Zadi, 28 years old, was reunited with his family after being taken to a hospital for a brief checkup. The agency quoted an unnamed source as saying no ransom was paid for his release. Ziad al-Ajili of the Iraqi Press Freedom Monitoring Center praised the swift response of Al-Baghdadiya and several human rights organizations in Iraq and abroad, which emphasized the humanitarian aspect and Zadi's qualities as a journalist. Al-Baghdadiya yesterday broadcast a special two-hour program dedicated to Zadi, who has worked for the station since 2005. So this guy was already in the news and already had quite a following. Two-hour program. Anybody can send me a two-hour program. I'd like to see it. Really interesting stuff. So then this guy, apparently when he was kidnapped, this must be what happened, he became a sleeper agent. Yes, and when Bush began speaking, he triggered something in this guy that made him stand up, take off his shoe, and throw it at Bush. That's my theory. So now, thousands of Iraqis are taking to the streets to demand his release. Yeah. Journalist Muntaha Al-Zadi, who was kidnapped by Shiite militants last year, was being held by Iraqi security yesterday, interrogated about whether anybody paid him to throw his shoes at Bush during a press conference the previous day in Baghdad. He was also being tested for alcohol and drugs, and his shoes were being held as evidence and eventually museum pieces. Now, I don't know if people know this. You should know this by now because it's been talked about enough, but showing the sole of your shoe to someone in the Arab world is a sign of extreme disrespect. And, of course, throwing your shoes at their head is even worse. Newspapers across the Arab world on Monday printed front-page photos of Bush ducking the flying shoes, and satellite TV stations repeatedly aired the incident, which provided fodder for jokes and was hailed by the president's many critics in the region. "Iraq considers Sunday as the International Day for Shoes," said a joking text message circulating around the Saudi capital. Text messages circulate around capitals. That doesn't happen around here. The only text messages I get are from people I know or spam artists, but they don't really circulate. Palestinian journalists in the West Bank town of Ramallah joked about who would be brave enough to toss their shoes at Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, another U.S. official widely disliked in the region. Many users of the popular internet networking site Facebook posted the video of the incident to their profile pages, showing al-Jadi leaping from his chair as Bush and Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki were about to shake hands Sunday and hurl his shoes at the president, who was about 20 feet away. "This is a farewell kiss, you dog," al-Jadi yelled in Arabic as he threw his shoes. "This is from the widows, the orphans, and those who were killed in Iraq." And we're talking about probably well over 100,000 people killed as a result of this stupid invasion. And that's not counting the people on our side. And the people who were maimed and whose lives were destroyed for nothing. So yeah, you know, a couple of shoes, that's a small price to pay. Small price. Al-Jadi was, I know I'm pronouncing his name differently every time I say it, was immediately wrestled to the ground by Iraqi security guards. The incident raised fears of a security lapse in the heavily guarded green zone where the press conference took place. Reporters were repeatedly searched and asked to show identification before entering and while inside the compound. Al-Zaid's tirade was echoed by Arabs across the Middle East who are fed up with U.S. policy in the region and still angry over Bush's decision to invade Iraq in 2003. Al-Jadi is the man, said 42-year-old Jordanian businessman Samer Tabalat. He did what Arab leaders failed to do. Can you imagine an Arab leader throwing his shoes at Bush? That would be something. But you know what? Going back to my statement of before, yeah, I think it was your obligation to, if you couldn't throw your shoes at him, which might be kind of awkward, at least give him a good crack across the face with your hand. Open face slap. Nothing wrong with that. You invade a country and cause hundreds of thousands of deaths, yeah, I think that's something that you should be expecting. Anyway, so that's a bit of fun. And of course, there are many stories coming out about this. The shoe thrower's brother, it's amazing how it's always about shoes, whether you're trying to blow up a plane or smack the president, shoes always seem to enter into it. But the brother of the journalist says that his sibling's actions were spontaneous and represented millions of Iraqis who want to humiliate the tyrant. Tyrant, of course, being Bush. And the Secret Service, this is a great headline. I saw this in the Washington Post. Secret Service defends shoe response. Can you imagine you just sort of wake up, you don't know what's going on, you pick up the paper and you see that headline, Secret Service defends shoe response. But what does that mean? Well, the Secret Service defended its agent's response to an Iraqi journalist who threw the shoes, saying they acted with the proper balance of aggressiveness and restraint. They say it will be up to Iraqi officials to prosecute Montadar al-Jadi, the journalist arrested. No one should read anything more into it than what it was, which was an individual throwing a shoe, according to a Secret Service spokesman. Now, they say this is a room full of cleared and screened press, and that could be the case anywhere. We wouldn't expect this type of behavior out of our press corps, but within the security structure, people can still misbehave. William H. Pickle, a former Secret Service agent and former sergeant-at-arms in the Senate, said other than the shoes, the most deadly weapon in that room was going to be a chair or a pen. He said there are limits to what security officers can do in such situations. Unless you isolate the president from human contact, I'm not sure you can entirely prevent someone from doing something like that. Hear that? They can't prevent it. They can't prevent reporters from throwing shoes. It's nothing they can do. All right, open season now. Always nice to see a bit of fun. Everyone had a good time. Okay, now continuing in the world of politics. Now, this is getting kind of interesting. Apparently, Caroline Kennedy is in the running to replace Hillary Clinton to get her Senate seat. She said on Monday, in fact, she told Governor Patterson on Monday that she wants the seat. And apparently, Patterson is confused as to how much he should be charging for it, based on events in Illinois. Just kidding. He knows how much to charge. She's interested in becoming the new senator. Of course, Governor David Patterson will choose a replacement. What's interesting about this is that they're talking about the, the reign of the Kennedys and how this would continue the streak, because there's always a Kennedy somewhere in power. And that particular seat, actually, how do they know if that's a particular seat that Robert Kennedy had? Robert Kennedy used to have that Senate seat, but couldn't he have had the other Senate seat? Do they actually separate them? I guess they must. They must keep track of who ran for which seat, but they're pretty much the same seat because you're representing the entire state. I wonder if you can trade seats. You know, that would be something. Two Senate seats per state? Nobody would know the difference. So, yeah, it's interesting because Caroline Kennedy has not run for anything. She, of course, is the daughter of John F. Kennedy, late John F. Kennedy, and her uncle, the late Robert F. Kennedy, as I said, held that particular Senate seat. And the other front runners, well, there really aren't that many. New York Attorney General Andrew Cuomo, and he's not even saying if he's interested or not. Representative Nydia Velasquez of Brooklyn took herself out of the running on Friday. So we'll see where that goes. Now, Patterson will appoint her, and then there'll be a special election in 2 years. Supposedly, Republicans are pushing for this as well. I heard that idiot King wants to run for that Senate seat as a Republican. I'll get into why he's an idiot some other time. But apparently, he's all in favor of Kennedy running because he thinks he can beat her. We'll see. All right, inauguration coming up. That's going to be very interesting. Now, I issued this appeal over the other radio show. Maybe people didn't hear me on this one. But if you have tickets to the inauguration, you know, you can get tickets just by calling your elected representatives and asking them for tickets. Of course, they'll say that there's a big list. But you know what? If everybody calls and asks, somebody's going to get tickets. And then, of course, you're out in Wyoming or something like that, or in a different part of the country that you can't get to the inauguration, you simply send me the tickets and then I go. And I bring my tape recorder down there, record it, and then it's as if you went, you see? Very simple. You can transfer them. No problem. And, of course, they're free, so you don't have to charge me anything. So just keep that in mind. It's a win-win for everybody. But I'm going to be down there in one capacity or another and witnessing this entire thing. It's going to be fascinating. It's going to be very interesting. What we saw on Election Day, what we aired here on this particular program a few weeks ago, that was history. And what's going to happen in January is also going to be history. They say it's likely to be the largest inauguration celebration or get-together or gathering ever in history. Now, the last time I went down there for an inauguration was to kind of protest George W. Bush. Remember, it was after that contentious election. And it was interesting. It was a lot of fun. Met a lot of people down there. And saw all kinds of demonstrations going on. Didn't really participate in demonstrations. I stood by the side of the road while the motorcade was going by, and this was the hostile section of the crowd that was holding all kinds of signs saying nasty things to Bush, and they kind of sped up and did about 50 going past that particular part of the crowd. But it was still a part of history, still something I wanted to see. This is going to be a completely different mood. It's going to be celebratory, fascinating. I'm very much looking forward to it. Now, I also just heard that there's going to be an event on January 17th. Now, the inauguration is on January 20th. That's a Tuesday. So we probably won't be on the air that day. But on January 17th, which is a Saturday, there's going to be an event in Philadelphia. I won't say what the event is. I just say it's the start of a day-long journey. They're going to be, get this, taking the train from Philadelphia to Washington. Now, this is great because remember last week we were talking about high-speed rail and how hopefully Barack Obama throwing money at the infrastructure in this country will result in improved mass transit. That would be great. Of course, it's up to the local governments, it's up to the state governments, city governments to say this is a priority so that the money can be used for that. It sounds like the possibility is there, certainly in places like California, certainly in places like the Northeast and hopefully in places like the Midwest. We were talking about that last week, where all these cities are fairly close together and the high-speed rail network between them would make it far preferable to taking airplanes. So now this trip to Washington by Obama and Biden, and of course, those of you following would know Biden took the train every day when he was a senator. From Delaware to Washington, D.C., he'd hop on the Amtrak every day and go back. So a big rail fan there. So they're going to have this event in Philadelphia on Saturday before boarding the train and picking up Vice President-elect Joe Biden and his family in Wilmington, Delaware. And I want to be somewhere along that train route. Can you imagine what that's going to be like? People lined up maybe all the way from Philadelphia to Washington, D.C., along the side of the rail. Do you think that's possible? Do you think it's going to be something like that? I mean, that would be historic. I don't know what kind of security they'd have to put in place for an event like that. Hopefully not too much, because it'll definitely be a fun thing to remember for the rest of your life, seeing the Obama train go by. And I don't know if that train is going to go as fast as most Amtraks do down the Northeast Corridor, which is about 115 miles an hour. And that's another cool thing to do. If you're ever looking for something to do and you're in the Philadelphia area, just, I think you travel a little bit south of Philadelphia and stand on the side of the tracks, or go to a SEPTA station, which is their commuter line, and just watch the Amtrak trains go by at tremendously high speeds, or at least for this country, tremendously high speeds. They're doing twice that in other countries. And it's really something to see. So add to that the history of Barack Obama and Joe Biden taking the train to take over the country in Washington, D.C. That will be something to witness. Now, Ahmed Belaviv, the executive director of the Presidential Inauguration or Inaugural Committee, said in a statement, "We hope to include as many Americans as possible who wish to participate but can't be in Washington. These events will allow us to do that while honoring the rich history and tradition of previous inaugural journeys." The theme was chosen, the theme being Renewing America's Promise, to underscore Obama's commitment to restoring opportunity and possibility for all and reestablishing America's standing as a beacon of hope around the world. Well, hopefully it'll be as good as that statement. But I'm seeing some promising things. This is another promising thing. For the first time in American history, a gay and lesbian band will be marching in a presidential inauguration. Yeah, it might sound a little silly, but imagine that this is the first time, and the significance becomes apparent. Barack Obama's Presidential Inaugural Committee has chosen the Lesbian and Gay Band Association with members from across the country to march in the inaugural parade in Washington on January 20th. 26 Bay Area musicians from the San Francisco Lesbian Gay Freedom Band and Cheer San Francisco. That's the silliest name I've ever heard. San Francisco Lesbian Gay Freedom Band and Cheer San Francisco? I don't even know what they're trying to say there. Well, anyway, they'll participate as members of the Lesbian and Gay Band Association, a national group tapped to march in the inaugural event. According to the Washington Blade, which reported the news, they said Bill Clinton allowed gay groups to perform their music on the sidewalk during his inauguration, but not to march in the parade. Yeah, you got to stand on the side of the road, but you can't be in the parade. Pretty amazing. So, yeah, that's another little bit of history there. We'll see where that goes. Okay, on to some more serious things. Last week we were talking about events in Patchogue in Brooklyn. And there have been some developments since then. I actually found myself in Patchogue last week. I was, what a nightmare this was. What a nightmare. Trying to find IDE cables for a computer. They're those flat cables that apparently you can't buy them in stores anymore. You have to buy them online. And I was with a friend of mine, and we were just traveling from store to store, and we went to a Radio Shack, and they said, you know what, there's this computer store down in Patchogue. You go there, which of course was closed by the time we got there. But I realized as I was driving in, oh my God, I'm going to Patchogue. And I asked my friend, is there any Hispanic blood in you at all? Because they can smell that. You know, be careful. You got to be careful in this place. half joking. But, you know, when things like what have happened there stick in your mind, you just, you can't erase them very easily. And we got through it okay. The people seemed friendly enough. But, wow. It's made national news, made international news. We're talking about the unprovoked killing of a Hispanic man a few weeks ago from Ecuador who was killed by a bunch of teenagers who were looking for Hispanics to beat up. Now, here's something interesting. Now, we mentioned last week the Guardian Angels are patrolling in Patchogue and how I think that's a damn good idea because people continue to be attacked there just because of their race or their appearance. Now, this from a story in Newsday. Mayor Paul Pontieri could have told the Guardian Angels that their much-publicized patrols probably would accomplish little. The patrols are not unwelcome, the mayor stressed. But the problem is that the Angels, at least according to one of the members who talked to him, plan to patrol from 5 p.m. until 10 p.m. And the village could put those extra eyes to better use from 11 p.m. to 2 a.m., according to the mayor. According to Pontieri, that's when Latinos have been hurt walking home after working at restaurants and other businesses. If they want to serve as escorts for workers making their way home at night, he said, that would be great. One of the Guardian Angels told Pontieri that the group planned to keep patrolling at least until Christmas. Then Pontieri said, we're back on our own, I guess. That's okay because our code officers and Suffolk County Police have done a lot over the past weeks to defuse a tense situation. Pontieri, the twice-elected mayor, is determined to see his village through. When you've lived here as long as I have, you should be able to feel the changes, see the signs, he said. I didn't. Things were in front of me, and I did not see. For years, he said, he met with members of the Latino community at the library. I would give my talk about how the best way to get along with neighbors is to walk out the front door and look around the neighborhood. If your neighbors put their bikes away in the back of the house, you put your bikes away in the back of the house. If the neighborhood is quiet after 9 p.m., you're quiet after 9 p.m. One day, he said, residents asked that an officer be stationed outside the library. I thought they wanted to be safe while leaving at night. I didn't think to ask the second question of whether they felt they would not be safe on the street. After the death of the Ecuadorian man about a month or so ago, Pontieri was stunned to learn that it was not unusual for Latino restaurant workers to be harassed walking home at night. He visited the site of the slaying, saying he saw that it was dark and ordered two streetlights. He added a third near another dark intersection where Latino workers said it was not unusual for groups of teenagers to jump out from bushes to attack them. Apples don't fall from a pear tree, he said. Doesn't matter whether there are 7, 14, or 107 of them. They're all our children. They react to what adults have to say. Children hear talk about undocumented immigrants, about them and us, and what they hear is that those people are bad. This guy gets it. I am so impressed. This guy actually understands the situation, the mayor of Patchogue, and I think now there might actually be some hope for that situation. Because people will listen to him. They will hear what he has to say, and they will react to that. And that is exactly what we need. So that's good to hear. It's good to hear people with a reasoned approach like this. Pontieri said he recently ran into a group of Patchogue Medford students collecting donations for a food drive. I asked him how things were going. One girl got teary and said people think we're angry, horrible people. Obviously, it's not true of everybody, but the problem has to be confronted and addressed. That's good to see some progress. Now, different story in Brooklyn, where people are police at least, maybe people as well. I hope more people are looking for the killers of another Ecuadorian. We reported last week that he had died. Actually, that was premature. It had been reported that he had died after being attacked. But in fact, he died on Friday. He was on life support about a week or so ago. Now, a few hundred people on Sunday marched in Brooklyn to protest the fatal beating of the 31-year-old Ecuadorian man incident, authorities say may have been a hate crime. And yet, you know, we can get into a whole discussion about hate crimes, whether or not that's a valid term or whether or not that's something that's fair or not fair, because obviously every murder is a hate crime of sorts. But isn't there something particularly horrendous about being killed simply because your skin color is a little bit different or your sexual orientation is different? Now, not in any way trying to excuse murder of other people for other reasons, but when you get into a fight with somebody in a bar and you get smashed over the head with something and you die as a result of that, that's horrible. No question about it. But isn't there a certain extra level of evil attached to just mowing down somebody who doesn't even know you simply because of the way they look or because you don't like where they come from or you don't like what they supposedly stand for? I've talked to a lot of people about this particular case. I'm amazed. I'm amazed by how people shrug it off, saying, yeah, this kind of thing happens. Plus, you know what? They thought he was gay, but he wasn't really gay. So it's not really, you know, a hate crime. Now, you know what? That's nonsense. That's utter nonsense. It's still a hate crime, even if the person is not actually gay and is killed for being gay, because, you know, it's the perception of the person doing the killing. So it's unbelievable that they have not even had any leads in this particular case. The people who attacked him were black. That might have something to do with it. Sad to say, but it seems to be true sometimes that headlines aren't given if certain criteria aren't met. Gang of white people beating up somebody because of their racial composition, well, usually that kind of thing is given attention when it happens. When other races are involved, not as much attention, I'm sad to say. Police are offering a $22,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of anyone involved in the attack. Which took place, I guess it was about 10 days ago or so. Jose Sukizani and his brother Romel had left a party at a church when several men approached them in a car in Brooklyn's Bushwick section, about a block from the brothers' home. The men shouted anti-gay and anti-Latino vulgarities and attacked them. The brother escaped with minor scrapes and has talked with detectives, and a sketch of one possible suspect has been released. Yeah. Like I said, open season on Ecuadorians in this country. Imagine what it must be like over in that country to keep hearing reports of the things that are happening over here. What this place looks like to them. Really, really sad. Now, here's something else which struck me as simply astounding. Tanika Talley was stabbed to death in March 2006. Yeah, I know it's a cheerful program tonight. I'm sorry. But there's a lot to cover here and has to be dealt with. Tanika Talley was stabbed to death in March 2006 while she was working as a clerk at a dollar store in Fairfield. That's in California. Her killer's only motive, prosecutors say, is that she was African-American. That's also the reason the store's workers' compensation insurer is denying death benefits to her 11-year-old son. Apparently, Specialty Risk Services, which is the insurer, is taking the position that a racially motivated killing is personal, not work-related, even though the man charged with killing Talley had never met her before. The insurance company, the store, Dollar Tree, and their lawyers aren't talking publicly about the case, but are defending their position before a state appeals board that hears workers' compensation disputes. They're saying the killing didn't arise out of her employment, except that in this case, she wouldn't have been killed if she hadn't been at work. That's according to the grandmother's attorney. This person didn't know her, just walked into the store and picked her out. Now, you see, when something like that happens, I don't know, isn't there something that something that makes it even worse than all the other killings we hear about that involve altercations of various sorts? Maybe the hate crime law or bill or whatever should be renamed simply randomness, when it's somebody that you kill for no reason at all, just because they're there, you know? I just think there should be something added for that. Especially when you consider people might get away with it if there weren't this particular law in place. That's reason enough right there. Okay, speaking of getting away with things, we've all been following this this auto bailout story. It failed in Congress last week, and nobody knows what's going to happen now, if they're going to take money from the other bailout package or whatnot. But here's something interesting. We know who the big three are. They're Ford, General Motors, and Chrysler. Now, a friend of mine told me this. I did not know this, but Chrysler, I knew that Chrysler was not publicly traded. They were private. But I did not know who owned Chrysler. Do you know who owns Chrysler? Or who has control of, 80% of Chrysler? It's this company called Cerberus. I've never heard of them before. Cerberus. They spell it Cerberus. Now, who are these people? They're one of the largest private equity investment firms in the United States. They're based in New York City, run by 48-year-old financier Steve Feinberg. Former U.S. Vice President Dan Quayle has been a prominent Cerberus spokesperson and runs one of its international units. They were founded in 1992. In 2006, its holdings amounted to $24 billion. They're doing well. Now, they own 80% of Chrysler Corporation, but they have refused to inject cash into Chrysler. In response to questioning at a hearing before the House Committee on December 5th, the spokesperson said that Cerberus's other fiduciary obligations to its other investors and investments prohibited it from injecting capital. Can you believe that? They've got the money, but they're not going to put anything in, even though they already own the company. They expect us to do this. Now, laid off New Page workers. Not sure what New Page is. What is New Page? Anybody know? Well, anyway, it doesn't really matter. They're laid off workers. They're planning to go to New York City to protest at the office of Cerberus Capital Management. Okay, it's a paper mill. That's what New Page is. And they were laid off back in 2005. Actually, no, they were laid off this year, September. The company shut down the Kimberly, Wisconsin mill, leaving 600 workers without jobs. Now, as we mentioned, Cerberus also owns 80% of Chrysler. Now, according to Representative Steve Kagan, Democrat of Wisconsin, Congress should demand that Cerberus, I hope I'm pronouncing it right. I've never seen that word before, so I might be getting it wrong. Congress should demand that Cerberus sell a portion of their holdings, such as our two idle paper mills in northeast Wisconsin, to generate the cash they need to keep Chrysler afloat, instead of asking taxpayers to pay for their company's mistakes. But Cerberus representatives attending a union meeting in Wisconsin on Thursday said this is not an option. Chrysler doesn't borrow from me, and I don't borrow from them. We are independent companies. Unbelievable. Former workers are upset that their hard-earned taxpayer money could help prop up the fund that basically laid them off. Yeah, it makes me sick, said a former New Page worker. It's like a double whammy. First, they take away the jobs for these families, and then you expect us to bail them out. It's crazy. Representative Kagan said, they believe that Chrysler is such a good investment, they should generate the cash to keep Chrysler afloat. Simply unbelievable. The money is there. They just choose not to direct it in a particular way and expect us to do it for them. Unreal. Okay, let's do this. Let's go into delay. And we'll take some phone calls. Our phone number is 631-632-WUSB. 631-632-9872. Let me just cue something up here so that we're ready to go into delay and hopefully it'll happen smoothly.
This is Daniel from the Supreme Dicks, and you are listening to WUSB Stony Brook.
Again, our phone number, 631-632-9872. We have about, about 10 minutes or so. Yeah. We have phone calls. All right, I guess we should take the phone calls. No reason not to. I was going to read some letters, but we can read letters later. If you want to send us a letter, otw at 2600.com is our phone number. Good evening. You are on Off the Wall.
Good evening, sir. How are you?
How are you? Where are you calling from?
Selden.
Okay. I think you're a regular caller.
I'm a regular. I'll make it real fast.
Make it real fast. Make way for the new callers.
May I talk?
If you talk quickly, yes.
Okay. On the George Bush thing, and the war, when you use the phrase, no good has come, but on the shoes, he deserves it because that area, nothing as good has happened. The propaganda, of course, you know, Eric, is that we brought democracy to the region. So that's what many people in America believe, even though you and I don't believe that, okay?
Right, right.
Next thing. In Patchogue, when you said they treated you okay, truly you'd have to go as an undercover, incognito as a Spanish person to know how you're really treated, right? And the last thing, the hate crimes, of course, that was like the one good thing America did when it invented hate crime, it added the hate crime concept to murder. And now how anybody would take issue with that is insane, okay?
Okay.
All right, man.
Thanks. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hey, how you doing?
Where are you calling from?
Right now I'm in Mineola.
Mineola, great.
Yeah. Listen, I wanted to ask you a question. I know the shoe being chucked at Georgie was a bonehead move, but what do you think would have happened to the genius who did that if this was 5 years ago? They probably would have taken him out back and shot him and then tortured him.
Who would have, the Americans or the Iraqis?
okay.
If he threw the shoe at Saddam Hussein, is that what you mean?
Yes, or any of the other military, figureheads there. Back in the old days. But what do you suppose would have happened to him?
Well, yeah, I imagine they, nobody is pretending that was a good regime, that was a very nice regime, and certainly I don't think people would throw shoes at Saddam Hussein and expect it to be laughed off.
Well, funny, though. I'll give you that.
Yeah, but in this particular case, you're talking about an invading nation, and I think it's the reaction shows that most people really don't like us over there, and it's about time we heeded that.
A lot of people don't like us. I like to travel like you, and a lot of people don't like us a lot of places. I mean, I found that Western Europe, Eastern Europe, parts of Asia.
Mm-hmm.
That's just where that goes. All right, where
people,
I'm sort of kind of semi-regular, so you know what? I'll hang up and let somebody else jump in.
Well, let me just ask you one question before you do. Were people actually rude to you when you said you were an American, or were they just critical of the government?
Believe it or not, I don't even like to admit this, but people always say people in France are really horrible towards Americans.
Mm-hmm.
I only had one instance where a guy, I was asking for a particular train station, and it was a test, is what I did. And what he did is he told me to go the direct opposite way, and I knew it was the wrong way.
Uh-huh.
There was a woman from behind me who was from Sheboygan, Wisconsin, who actually spoke French, and she pulled me aside and said, no, he told you the wrong way, and I told her what I was doing. But unfortunately, that was the only time I was ever, they knew I was an American, obviously, and that was the only time that I was ever, I guess, rude, if you will.
But are you sure that's the reason?
That was the only thing that I could think of. Other than that,
maybe the guy just didn't like giving directions, or maybe he was bad at it.
Yeah, but you would think if the guy's behind the train ticket window, I don't think he did it because, it was his job. I think he did it because, like you said, I was American, everybody else.
That's true. Well, he might not have liked English speakers, period. But, you do encounter this occasionally.
Yeah,
no question
but
about
you know
it.
What? I have to say, but it's nowhere as bad as everybody else. At all. French. That's rubbish.
Mm-hmm. No, the French are amazing. I love it over there, and they're very nice and friendly.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, my friend, she used to live in Orléans. I can never say it right.
Mm-hmm.
She just moved to Manhattan. As a matter of fact, she said she'd never go back.
Really?
But I don't believe she will. Her parents wouldn't stand for that.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that was the only time I'd ever had any kind of incidents where somebody was rude or didn't like me because I was American. I've never had, go back to America, you filthy dog, or anything like that.
Yeah, and you contrast that to some of the reactions here to people that are perceived as being foreign or maybe even like not in this country legally, which is something that I, you know, I think is no one ever asks me when I'm overseas, when I'm in different countries, are you here illegally? You know, they just they welcome you and they treat you as a human being. And that's what we should be doing to other people as well. And I just wonder how the rest of the world looks at us when they see the way we treat other people.
Yeah, agreed. And I can't say that I haven't gotten questions, you know, mm-hmm. why are Americans the way they are? And why is your, one of my favorites, why is your president your president?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. It's one I've asked many times.
I've gotten that as well.
All right, sir. Thank you very much for your call.
Not a problem.
Take care. Let's take another call. 631-632-9872. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Good evening. This is Bobson of Bulgaria. We met at What the Hack a few years back.
Oh, hey, how you doing? You're in Bulgaria now?
Yep.
Wow, and you have the best connection of anyone who's called so far.
Well, it's a VoIP thing, by the way. I'm not sure how long it's going to be good, but about the guy with the shoe-throwing thing, uh-huh. the journalist of Iraq, I think, remember that big statue of Saddam Hussein?
Yeah, that the Americans pulled down and everybody started slapping with their shoes.
Yeah, the statue in Baghdad, if they put a statue of this journalist there, it would be a good thing, I think.
Oh, what a good idea. You know, instead of where Saddam Hussein's statue was, they erect a statue for the journalist who threw the shoe at Bush. That would be something. That would be something. And, you know, in a way, that would be something Bush could actually be proud of, because look at what people now are able to say, to point at with pride, somebody who actually stood up to authority, even though the authority they stood up to was him.
Well,
that's interesting. How has reaction in Bulgaria been to this?
Well, I talked to a few people and they were like understanding about it. I mean, it wasn't a big surprise, but they were scared about the guy.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you
about trains, if I may.
I'm sorry?
About trains.
Yes.
Well, that's the VoIP for you.
I hear my voice. I guess that's on the computer that you're playing it.
Well, yeah, but
okay.
There's a company trying to win the next high-speed rail contract in France.
Okay.
And their project is.
You're really going to have to turn that down because I think you're being confused by the delay.
No, it's not the delay. Okay. It's the VoIP falling apart.
Okay. Well, it sounds okay. It sounds okay. I just hear pauses occasionally.
Yeah. So this high-speed rail thing, when it was reported on the TV Euronews channel, they said part of what they were aiming for was the U.S. rails.
Uh-huh. Well, that'd be something. And Euronews, you know, I'm one of the few people in this country who can see Euronews because we have cable vision. In fact, anyone here who gets cable vision is listening to me on channel 103. They have Euronews, and it's you watch that an hour or a half hour a day, and you become so much more informed on everything going on in the world. And yeah, it's one of my favorite channels. And unfortunately, most of the United States doesn't get it, but it's something I think everybody in Europe gets. Let me ask you a question. In Bulgaria, what has been the reaction of people and of the media towards Barack Obama? Do they see it as a new beginning for the United States?
Well, I'm not a big media consumer person, so I won't be. But the people around me I spoke to were mostly. It was interesting. It was exciting. Back when the election happened,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if
were people celebrating on the streets there.
Well, not that I heard of.
Okay, it would be unusual in Bulgaria for that to be happening for an election in the United States, but still, it's historic in nature.
Yep. Congratulations on the new commander-in-chief, by the way.
Well, we'll see how it goes next month, for sure. Hey, are we going to be seeing you at the Dutch Hacker Camp next year?
Well, I'm not sure yet, but I will try to.
Okay, well, good hearing from you again.
Budget for it.
All right, we're out of time now, but great hearing from you, and hopefully I'll make it over there to Sofia, Bulgaria, someplace in the next year or so.
All right. Would be great.
Take care. And that's going to just about do it for us as far as phone calls tonight. Yes, we're out of time, but you can write to us, otw@2600.com. Express your views, your points, your outrage, whatever it is you have to say. We're here for you. It's Emmanuel for Off the Wall. Have a good night and stay awake.
Kids, and it is up to you. You're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook.